Nachos Amigos, and welcome to Record Breakers, a music podcast where a group of friends in yellow t-shirts hang around and talk about music with each other, and it's totally not a cult. I'm Petey Rave, your dear leader. Here with me is my team, my squad, my crew. We've got David.
That B in Buenos really peaked.
Yeah. We've got Matt.
I always forget that Taco Bueno is not a national chain.
Mm-hmm. Well, everybody's got like their regional. It's like you got the Taco Bell and then you got the Taco Local. You know, Taco Local.
Oh, we got Taco Bueno, Cabana, Casa.
Yeah.
We have Las Cazuelas.
Yeah. And of course, we've got Brett.
We've got Leonardo, noted name of man making ethnic foods of not Italia. But when I peek, I'm eating a grilled cheese sandwich and have my pupils open up, and then I hop onto the shag bus, and then I hang out with some groovy dudes.
You mean further?
Yeah.
David Cassidy.
We're here to talk about an album. We're here to talk about some music, and it's finally time. I think it's the moment that the episode we've been waiting ever since Matt came onto the show. We figure it was inevitable. Matt, what have you brought for us this week?
I have brought the 1970 album by the Grateful Dead, American Beauty.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about expectations, because this is definitely a name we know. But let's talk about our expectations. I'll start with David. David, what were your expectations coming into this album?
Matt, I want to ask you a question. Longtime listeners of the Record Breakers podcast probably get the ideas. For me, it would probably be Dream Theater. For Brett, it's probably Rush. For Petey, it's something Korean. Matt, would that be like the equivalent for the Grateful Dead for you? Would that be kind of in that area?
Maybe. I guess I don't really understand what exactly you're asking, what category this is.
Are they like really, really, really high up in like your personal favorites?
Yes and no. I guess I would say yes. It's one of those things where I might not necessarily call them my favorite band, but if you give me enough time...
But they're up there. They're up there.
They're definitely up there. And I try to avoid being like a big zealot.
I'm not going to use the term that people use to describe Grateful Dead fans in your case. Yeah, but
I'll say Deadhead.
Okay. That's their word. I'm not going to say it.
I think there are different levels of Deadhead, and I'm probably like...
But they're up there for you.
I'm in the spectrum.
Okay. You're tier A or B, maybe, but not tier
probably
S.
Probably tier B.
He's not, in the Deadhead spectrum. That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. Brett, what were your expectations coming into this album?
I mean, honestly, my knowledge of the Grateful Dead is the musically is limited. Like the entire catalog of them is massive, and it's like something that I've never wanted to dive into. Like not knowing, I mean, I could probably this album was probably a very easy one for people to jump into it from what the reviews I saw. But like my memory of the Grateful of like my growing up, like I remember before Jerry died and everything, there was a 1995 concert in Noblesville down the road where they had to deploy tear gas because of gate crashers, and I remember the music video very vividly of Touch of Grey where they had the puppets. And I've heard at least one of these songs on this album played in bars. Like,
yeah,
yeah, it's kind of a blind spot for me. It's a little out of my wheelhouse. I also know people who traveled around the country following this band in the day, and you can make three guesses as to how some of them make money on the side. I was looking forward to this because I had, aside from knowing Casey Jones and a couple other songs, I really didn't have names for their songs.
Yeah,
in my head.
I have a similar boat. It's like Grateful Dead is a band that you know of, but you may not have listened to. Like, we may not have listened to Grateful Dead is a band you know jokes of.
Deservedly so. I'll be the first to say.
But it's one of those things where it's like you realize that it's a band that it's ever present, and you know it, but then you realize, for a lot of us, I would say me in particular, you haven't actually listened to with intent ever, or very rarely.
I haven't even listened on a couch melting into it, which I believe is the way that you're supposed to experience this for the first time.
Oh,
at a buddy's house.
This is something I actually listened to sober. Oh, geez. Do we need to reschedule?
I live sober. I don't know how we'll other ways out to listen to this.
Yeah.
You could go the Pigpen route and drink Southern Comfort straight from the bottle while you're with your girlfriend, Janis Joplin.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I don't have a death wish. Jesus.
No. let's talk about this album musically. Matt. How would you describe this album musically? What would be the themes and elements you bring up?
Well, let me backtrack a little. It's hard to pick one album of the Grateful Dead because their sound varied wildly throughout the decades. Like, one of their later albums, apparently it was kind of inspired after they saw Saturday Night Fever, and they were like, we need to do a disco album. And so they have two or three just straight up disco songs, and they're kind of good.
If you bring those, I'm here for it.
That is a band.
Yeah,
that band has people from Government Mule that play with the surviving members, and they did a disco. That is
Government Mule playing disco songs.
So that Warren Haynes going up there playing that live is. I want to see the video of that. I'm sure it lives.
I'm sure it does. If not video, then definitely audio.
Yeah, I just want to hear that open tune, or the standard tune slide guitar disco. Like,
seeing those good old boys swinging and grooving.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if I thought I could get away with it, I would have tried to bring one of my favorite commercial releases that... It came out a few years ago, but it's from a show. But that's a three-disc album, so I figured that's probably not a pleasant introduction.
Yeah.
and I think a lot of people kind of look down on the studio albums, but I think they're worth listening to because they kind of provide a baseline. So then when you're listening to live versions, a lot will be better, plenty will be worse, some will be about the same, but you kind of have... This is what they were... When they had total control, we assume, this is what they were happy with. This was my first album.
That was actually really similar to something Robert Fripp has said about King Crimson, in that the albums are love letters to what King Crimson really is, and the live performances and their live albums are like a date, like a really exciting date for what you really get to see what they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this was my first album, so I figured, well, that's as good an album as any. I know a lot of people recommend this as a good introduction. Onto the album itself, I think one of the things that really contributes to the longevity of the Grateful Dead is the lyrics. And I know some here don't listen to them particularly closely.
Oh no, I listen to the lyrics quite a bit on this album. Thank you very much.
Okay. I just
I was not expecting.
And I am the lyric, everybody. So I made sure to keep an extra eye and ear out.
All right. Well, if you need help, I have the annotated Grateful Dead lyrics in book form.
Yes.
Does it have all of the harmonies broken out so we can get Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young on in this?
Like, no, this is strictly... This is just lyrics.
Oh,
I was a literary analysis.
Nice.
Oh,
of all the lyrics.
I was hoping that book was full of sheet music for lyrics, and I was going to be, wow.
I would love to have the complete scores of every show that they ever did. And I imagine that
it
would be
that same size.
Yeah.
No, it would be like the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Oh, well, yeah.
Sorry,
we're derailing you pretty bad.
That's okay.
Go back to describing this, because there's a lot.
That book is, whoneedsgenius.com, where you have that book.
Exactly. This is the original genius right here. All of the lyrics were written by Robert Hunter, and in general, the Dead's lyrics were written by... Robert Hunter or John Perry Barlow. Yes, that one.
Uh-huh.
He was involved with the EFF and other stuff, I assume.
That explains a lot.
There's assumptions.
Explains a lot.
Yeah.
Yep. That explains a lot.
He was going to certain frontiers himself.
Oh, yeah. And this album also has a very kind of melodic bass. Phil Lesh tends to play a little higher, and it's a little more forward, and it's interesting to listen to. And this album in general has several guest musicians and principal musicians on non-principal instruments that lends itself to a bit of interest. And I think one last thing that's interesting is how the first four tracks alone... they all have different singers, and they all have different styles. And I think that kind of sums it up pretty well, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. David, how would you describe this album musically?
The main word I would use is folksy. It's if we're talking about rock music, especially of this time period... there's usually a more concerted effort of the idea of plugging in and turning up for the first or maybe second time. And on this album, you may hear some of that, but not a ton of it. Also, a lot of rock music of this time period was a bit more... what's the word I'm looking for? It was done with a little bit more intensity. And this album is very carefree. It's almost worry-free. And it's very, very chilled out rock music. And the emphasis is on kind of a very different vibe of rock music that was coming out in the late 60s and early 70s, where there was a swell of anxiety growing through just various worlds and cultures, and this really doesn't have any of that.
Mm-hmm. Brett, how would you describe this album musically?
At least the version that I listened to, this was a pretty impressively clear, fidelity-wise album. Which, you know, for something that is folksy and sometimes a little bit like Americana, almost country music inspired, like you kind of need it to be like that, especially when you have they got harmonies on this of all kinds of harmonies. And you can hear every little lick. You can hear the differences between guitars that are like also like for a band that is big as this, like you don't want to step on each other. And part of what helps that is when you're singing is way up there because like not everybody can do that. And listen to my voice. I cannot sing above an octave and a half of this. Yeah, my falsetto is like parked around the corner from where my speaking voice is. Yes. And you know, because this is the 70s, we get some really nice instrumentation that you wouldn't expect. You know, you get some steel guitar, you get some mandolin, you get reeded instruments you blow your mouth into, which is always nice. Like getting down to like really the main stuff about this album that really that stuck with me is this is a band of musicians that are really good at writing songs, like not just lyrically, which there are some turns of phrase in this that are pretty great. There are some pretty good things, but like there are some chord changes. There are some very, let's say if you were trying to make a very digestible radio friendly album, there were some choices that would have been made against what they did, but they made some choice, some like major, they did things with some major chords, that I wasn't expecting. Like there are some places where I'm expecting them just to go through the progression, like I would just reflexively. I'm like, oh, that chord, like, oh, look what they're doing there. Like, this isn't quite a bridge, but kind of a bridge, like, you know, it's like these guys know what they're kind of doing, and it sits well with the songs are constructed. There's a lot of ballad kind of things going on, like storytelling in this, in the lyrics too, which is neat. And also, you know, there's, they sing about some stuff, yeah. And that stuff's kind of neat.
Yeah.
When we get to the songs, I want to bring up the hand percussion toy of the album. And yes. It's not a bell.
Nice.
I'll leave that one for you then.
Yeah. I will say the musically it is very folksy. It's very like mellow. It is very, but you can tell like it's very intricately woven. It's well constructed. It's definitely made for chilling. Yeah.
Possibly chilling.
It's, I will say, probably not the album you want to listen to if you're particularly exhausted after a day's work driving home.
it has that kind of like 60s vocals.
Not exactly the album you want to listen to at the gym.
No. But it is an album worth like listening to, like when you kind of like want to get into like a musical headspace of like just like weaving into all the musicianship and kind of studying it, or just kind of like, or just want to get high and like fucking.
There's a lot of terrible times to listen to this album now. Sitting with your girl.
Depends on which girl.
Yes, but this is a very, very, this is one of those albums.
Yeah. Which is not, it's not a bad thing. It's just, you know, you gotta have particular headspaces. But it's all well made. It's all like fun and acoustic, and it's all like, but it does kind of get into like the dozing off and droopy, places. But I think for in a positive light, but let's talk about those key tracks. Matt, what would be some of the key tracks to zero in on?
Box of Rain, the opening track. It's sung by Phil Lesh, the bass player, who there's kind of a joke about everybody. It's like, let Phil sing. And then he sings and everybody is like, no, it's okay. You don't have to let him sing, except for Box of Rain. Because it's a great song, and he wrote the melody, and Robert Hunter wrote the lyrics about Phil having to visit his dad in the hospital. I think hence the line, such a long, long time to be gone and a short time to be there. Something interesting, I think, about this song is that the main lead, like the first one you hear, I'm pretty sure that's neither Jerry Garcia nor Bob Weir playing that. It's this other guy, John Dawson, which could explain the particular style of playing.
Do people just show up during recording sessions with the Grateful Dead? Do they just show up and
maybe
the rest of the band was like, yeah.
They just showed up. Sure. Probably just showed up to pick up some things.
Or drop something off.
It's like,
and they were like, hey, you wanna get in?
I'll deal you in.
That sounds heavy, brother. Let me get in on that.
Wait, yeah. Are you guys talking about like?
Anyway, operator. No idea what you're talking about. Operator. This is Ron McKernan, aka Pigpen Singing. I'm not sure how he has that nickname. He has this great kind of blues voice. Granted, it's probably white boy blues, but it's, you know, bluesy nonetheless. It's okay, yeah. And he's the one blowing and sucking them reeds. And it's just a cool song to me. I think it's interesting because you have a major 251 instead of a minor 251.
Yes, that is very, very odd.
Yeah,
like I have lived in 251 for months of my life, and never once have I thought of doing it that way.
Yeah,
and then it goes to the 6 minor before going back to the 1, and that's kind of weird too.
Mm-hmm.
Ripple, this one for me just sparks instant nostalgia, and likely it's just because it provides personal nostalgia for me. But there's also something about it that gives me the feeling that it kind of is one of those instant nostalgia generators, even if it's the first time you've heard it. Y'all are welcome to agree or disagree. I'll believe you. And this one has David Grisman playing some nice little mandolin on it, which, again, hey, man. We're recording in a few days. Why don't you come on down? Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Broke Down Palace. Hey, one more.
Yeah.
Maybe two. I feel like this is a good...
Yeah.
This was one of these albums that it's hard to just not choose every song because each one just has a little something.
Yeah.
I feel like this is just a good song if you want to be sad. I don't know. It has this very melancholy feel.
Grateful Dead invented emo. It's canon.
Pretty much.
We've called it. David, what would be some of the key tracks for you?
Friend of the Devil. It had a vibe to it that I'm going to call a shuffle. A shuffle is not quite a full-on groove, but you can kind of visualize people moving to it somewhat. It had a shuffle.
Like a Super Bowl one?
Twirling, perhaps?
Maybe twirling.
The truffle type?
But definitely shuffling. Definitely shuffling. Operator. I really got a pop out of the harmonica that played us out on the end of that track. That really popped me. I enjoy simple things like a good harmonica. Candyman. Also, the solo on Candyman. When I heard this, I put some notes in and was like, "Oh, this is Matt." Like I hear Matt in this. The solo on Candyman. I was like, "Oh, yeah, there he is. That's definitely Matt right there." And
I'll
broke
take
down
that as a compliment.
Musically, mm-hmm. Sure. Lyrically, no.
No. The solo. I'm talking about the solo.
Yeah.
That was Matt right there. It was like, yep, that's him. Broke Down Palace, I wanted to like it, but it was a little too folksy for me. That's what I wrote down. It was just a little too Americana. I was ready for a little more sauce when this track came around.
Mm-hmm. Brett, what would be some of the key tracks for you?
Just I'm just trying to think what Art Garfunkel type sounds that sounded out of place right now that I can't remember because they're everywhere because every song's a little different and it is definitely of the time. Friend of the Devil is one of the songs that I've heard covered. Like whenever I see somebody walk up on a stage at a bar and there's a mandolin, I think that Friend of the Devil is like 75% chance if the people on stage look my dad's age. Those are good mandolin licks. Like, let me tell you, like you mm-hmm. can, that is not the way that I would play a mandolin, with the way that I hack at it, but they worked. Operator. So I don't have a Huiro, but if I did, I'd be in here scraping across the top of it going, because that came through so well. I mean, it works. Like, you can see why we stole that from the Caribbean. I mean, it's both like a thing you can clack on and scrape across. The other thing that I like, the jangly guitar, like that's it's jangly and clean, but it like also every now and then you'd hear the pick be a little heavier and you'd be like, oh, you're a little closer to breaking up than I was expecting. It might just be limitations of how they were recording it, but like it did add a little bit of fatness to it, like, because this is a very, very clean, there's not a lot of ripping of guitar with heavy overdrive, but there are things you can do while being a clean tone with some flavor, and there was some of that, and some of that just is probably the equipment that they were using. And by the way, that Huiro is my sproing of the album. I could not unhear that, and I'm curious why I don't own one. Like, because you know, not
Wait,
my
I
my
you...
I have that mahogany frog, but it doesn't have the, like, I actually want to get one that's made out of stainless steel, like the
Brett.
Puerto Rican fusion players use, like with the metal. Like, that's the ones that I want to get on.
I believe when you and Matt finally start your side project together, it should be called Mahogany Frog.
I mean, yeah. Mahogany Frog.
I think that's a great name.
Is up there with that's a pretty good one. Team and mahogany they make those frog. Of all sizes. You can get, like, gigantic Mahogany Frog.
One that you can ride.
Yeah, exactly. Till the Morning Comes. Also had some fantastic guitar tone. And it made me look things up. And of course, when you look things up about Grateful Dead equipment, I did not have time to consume all of that information. I will be going back.
Yeah.
This is the album. I have almost every song written down here with notes along, but I'm going to skip to Candyman, which is for me the song that stuck with me on this album more than anything. It's some pretty great lyrics. It could mean many different things, and there are conflicting reports of what it's about. And I think that's cool. Is it as cool as the Dog the Bounty Hunter haircut? If you look Jerry Garcia 1980s with his blonde poof on the top, it's borderline. Is it as cool as that white duck with the spiked collar from the what is it? The Bucket to Hell? What is that song
called?
Hell
in a Bucket.
Hell in a Bucket, yeah. Like, that's pretty cool, too. Is it as cool as the dog running away with the leg of the drummer? No. But that song...
What?
Somebody wasn't in the Slack today.
Yeah, we were pretty verbose in the Slack today. You could have missed something very easily. But let's just say Grateful Dead, when I came into this album, I was not thinking that I was going to be getting, like, a bunch of these... almost like Simon and Garfunkel, Crosby, Stills and Nash kind of soft tone.
And or Young.
At all. And I was expecting more of like Addicts of My Life, where you get a trippy slow jam with like early chorus effect on the guitar. Like, yeah. You know, that pedal had to be like this big. But yeah, there's so much to dig into this album. Like I could keep going on every single one of these songs. But yeah, like... Also, that harmonica was pretty awesome when it showed up because, man, that harmonica'd, like, and, like, right into your ears.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was in the mix. Like, it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was clean. It wasn't, like, you know, thorough good. Like,
Yeah.
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 Good.
Yeah.
Now I want to listen to George Thorogood.
Yeah. Always a good opportunity. Yeah, I think you guys pretty much touched on a lot of the songs that are the highlights. I would say, yeah, Box of Rain starts things off really well. Friend of the Devil felt familiar. I'm not sure if I've heard it before, but it definitely felt familiar.
You probably have.
Yeah, probably like, have. Just like yeah. the passing. Like it's like mm-hmm. it's somewhere in like this corner of my brain right over here, and I don't actively access it, but it's like there's something there. It's like detect magic where you don't see it, but you have the sense that it's off this direction.
What if I told you could open your third eye and you could exercise that part of your brain?
You see, Record Breakers listeners, here on this podcast, we don't just understand music, we overstand.
Exactly. Right. Truckin', but not the space kind, I thought it was a nice ending to the album. And I think it's fun. It's just like a fun track. I don't want to shout out Operator, but mainly just to say, hey, Pigpen, she's just not that into you.
Move on, man.
Yeah, it's not the floods. It's not the Utah. She's just not that into you.
Shout out to the operator for covering for her, though.
Yeah, like, hey, following protocol.
I'm sorry, man. That's privileged information.
Yeah. but yeah, shout out to them. Well, let's talk about some conclusions. David, what would be your conclusion on this album as a whole?
I was expecting this to be a little more rock, and it was more twangy than I expected. I'm gonna describe this as rock Americana. It really eschews the emerging distortion and anxiety that rock was becoming, and leaning more into the world of folk and country, and maybe touches of bluegrass, and it was incredibly chill. It was a chill kind of country-ish vibe that I think is a really good introduction to a group I'd always heard about in passing but never really spent much time on. And while I didn't particularly care much for the overall vibe of the album, there are some really interesting things going on in the playing. The playing is very, very good. And I would imagine you could definitely sit around to a bonfire with this album. I just don't go to bonfires very often.
Yeah. Brett, what would be your conclusion on this album?
I mean, I dug this album. You know, I'm glad that I got to have this curated for me. I found every listen. I listened to this album quite a bit throughout since I downloaded it, and played it in loop form, not actually knowing what came. Like every song sounds so much different, so I kind of like that was good because it didn't just all blend in. But every time I listened to it, I had something else that I could latch on to. I was like, oh, I hear that. And there's so much going on that you can continue to do that, and I probably will. And we'll see if it draws me back in. Like, this isn't like when I go for an album of this era, especially, I kind of don't go for a lot of this. But that's like probably a good reason for me to continue to. But, you know, it's probably not for everyone. Probably not even for me, but like there's enough here that I enjoy. Yeah. Like it's a good album. It's just it's a well cooked meal that like I may not be too hungry for, but yeah. You know I'll eat it, and you know it'll sustain my body.
Yeah,
it's a well cooked meal for me where I thought the seasoning was just not quite right.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say, yeah, I think it's well made, it's well done. I think it's really cool. It's definitely, it's good to listen to an experience, even if it maybe delves into feeling like a little like homework sometimes. But I think overall, there are just enough really cool moments and really cool spots that it's like, oh yeah, that's that moment is neat, that instrumentation is neat, that, you know, the guitar thing is neat, that, you know, the harmonies are fun. I like a good harmony. There's, you know, you can nice draw a nice line between this and, you know, Jurassic 5, who I love, you know, gotta love the harmonies. But I like the influences, like you can see the aforementioned Crosby, Stills, Nash, and/or Young, influences with the harmonies, and that's those, they have songs I enjoy as well. And I think this is going to be a similar thing where Grateful Dead have songs I enjoy, and this experience is, like Matt said, like a nice baseline for if I ever like. If I ever get to go see a Dead cover band, I'll be able to like, hey, and
recognize that one.
I know that thing, and be able to kind of have a baseline for like feeling it, which is neat. So I think it's definitely a worthwhile experience. I don't think I'm going to be playing, like jamming out to a lot of these tracks on a regular basis, but I think it's a worthwhile experience and it's a cool album. Yeah, ultimately, Matt, what would be your conclusion on this album as a whole?
Like I said at the beginning, it's really hard to pick one album to sum up the Grateful Dead, so the best I can do is pick one that I hope is interesting enough to kind of get you to, well, I'll listen to one more at least. And I think this is a pretty good introduction to them. As kind of was touched upon, this, along with their previous album, Working Man's Dead, which was the one that had Casey Jones on it, this was kind of their dip into folk music. Before those albums, it was like super spacey, and I don't even like listening to it all that much, other than kind of it's fun to listen to as a curiosity, but, you know, there's only so much of that I can really take. And the stuff after that, the albums also get interesting, but they, I think this is a pretty tight package, and I don't think there's a dead song on this. Like, there are some that, you know, not everybody will like.
There's like
10
dead
that.
Songs on this.
Ha! You got me. But, you know, it's, there's no real duds. Let's use that term instead. Yeah. And in case, let me just quickly rattle off a few recommendations. If you want to hear a good live one, a condensed live version, Grateful Dead is the name of the album, sometimes known as Skull and Roses.
That one.
Mm-hmm. If you want to hear another studio album that kind of gets weird but also has some more fun ones, Blues for Allah, which includes such tracks as King Solomon's Marbles, Sage in Spirit, and Blues for Allah, yeah, which includes Sand Castles and Glass Camels and Unusual Occurrences in the Desert, and also has crickets on it.
Yes.
Of course. Yeah.
Obviously. If you want to hear some disco songs, Shakedown Street and Feel Like a Stranger, just tweet me and I'll point you where you go. Yeah. But if this is the one I wanted to bring but couldn't, if you don't mind delving in and you can skip around, I won't be mad at you. It's called Wake Up to Find Out. It's from 1990 and Branford Marcellus sits in.
Oh, 152 minutes and 6 seconds.
Yes.
Wow. At the Nassau Coliseum in Uniondale, New York. Nice. Released by Rhino Records in September 9th of 2014.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Man, oh. Saxophone.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good.
Saxophone, you say?
Saxophone.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. All right, those are our thoughts on Grateful Dead's American Beauty. You can of course listen to the album on our Spotify playlist. But let's get to the main event of the evening. Get to the moment we've all been waiting for. Our haiku reviews. Let's get hype in the chat with the haiku reviews.
Woo-hoo. Hydro homies, are you ready?
With the 575. Let's get down to the nitty gritty. Haikumero numero uno. Brett, what is your haiku?
Personal blind spot. Folk country inspiration influences. God, I almost missed that one. I see the appeal.
Mm-hmm. David, what is your haiku?
More twang than I thought. I won't return. However, I see the appeal.
Yes. my haiku, I didn't use I see the appeal on my last line, unfortunately, so I broke the bit. But have you
planned that?
Have you listened to The Grateful Dead? Oh, cool, but what about Off Weed?
Yes, in fact, 100% have.
Yes.
So have I.
Yes. Last but not least, Matt, what is your haiku?
Songs with good lyrics. No one dead experience. Good introduction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go ahead and listen to this album on our Spotify playlist. Play Record Breakers the Home Game. Do your due diligence and your due diligence. Follow along at home. Keep up with us. On that Spotify playlist will be next week's record. And it's going to be a guest episode. It's finally around that cycle. We're going to have a guest that David invited onto the show and suggested for us. We're going to have Angela Anaconda aficionado, Alexandra Bender.
There you go, Petey. Work on that alliteration.
Yes.
That's my good brother.
And we're going to be talking about a nice compilation called The Ultimate Petula Clark, or Petula Clark. I think it's Petula Clark. The Ultimate Petula Clark. So look
petulant
forward to that.
Clark.
Yes.
Petulant
Clark. Petulant Clark is going to be Matt and Petey's band name.
Yes. Yeah.
Who's Clark, though?
Who knows? Who knows?
Clark Griswold.
It's up to interpretation.
Yes.
Man.
But yeah, we look forward to that next week, but that'll be next week, and this is this week. And you can, of course, find us all over the internet. David is at Call Me DJM. Matt is at MRiddickW. Brett is at HibbyDibberBritHibbyBITYBIBBRD. I'm at PD Rave. The show's at 4 Record Breakers. That's the number 4 Record Breakers. RecordBreakersPodcast.com. RecordBreakersPodcast@gmail.com. Rebelly.net for listening to the shows. Rebelly TV on YouTube and on Twitch. You can follow us on Twitch, just like fresh follower, Leonimus. Shout out to Leonimus.
Hey!
So shout out to him. So you can be with the cool kids watching us live as we record on Wednesdays.
Hi, homies.
Yes. So join us there. Like, share, subscribe. Find us everywhere you find podcasts. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, all over the places. Like, share, subscribe. Do all the things. Until next time. Hasta los huevos.
Toodaloo. And don't take brown acid.
Hashtag find Luke.
Or do. Rebelly Podcast, baby.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.